My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is mezzo-soprano Abigail Fisher. She studied at the Eastman School of Music. She's performed everything from Romeo and Juliet and La Clemenza di Tito with major opera companies to work by John Zorn with Laurie Anderson and Lou Reed. Nico Muglia has written work for her, like Mother Tongue, which I love, by the way. She's also a trained cellist and plays with groups like the Enzo String Quartet and with her dad, Norman Fisher, who you may remember from another episode of Classical Classroom. And now Decameron of Houston is bringing her here, where she'll be performing Missy Mazzoli's opera Song from the Uproar, Friday, March the 23rd, with the Now Ensemble. Abigail Fisher, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So what are you going to be teaching me about today?
Well, I would love to tell you about this amazing opera, which is incredible, inspiring opera by Missy Mazzoli, about this woman, Isabel Eberhardt, who lived in the turn of last century. It's this amazing story, but the opera itself is actually more of like an emotional journey about her own psyche and discovering herself. And she was a Russian born in Switzerland, and in a course of about 2 years, she lost her entire family and she moved to North Africa and traveled as a nomad, dressed as a man, converted to a Sufi sect that normally did not accept women, but since she was dressed as a man, they accepted her. And she married, fell in love with an Algerian man, and then he left her. And she, during this entire time, she was taking these deep, emotionally charged journals, and she always had this sense of dread, like something was going to happen to her very soon. And indeed, she ended up dying in a flash flood in Algeria. And her journals were strewn and about, and her husband had to pick up the pieces. And this is what was published eventually, and it ended up being a really, really important journal to read, especially in the 40s and 50s, historically, for women trying to make their own way and making their own path, because, you know, it's such an individual journey for a lot of us. And what is so wonderful about this piece, and what was so inspiring when we premiered the work 3 years ago, is that each person involved in it is sort of a new version of what, you know, Isabel Eberhardt is about. So the producer was a powerful woman making her own way, Beth Morrison, and the director, Gia Farrakis, was a powerful woman making her own way. And the composer who was inspired by the whole thing, Missy Mazzoli, a powerful woman making her own way. And then, of course, the protagonist playing Isabel Eberhardt, me. I'm extremely inspired by her. So obviously, like Joan of Arc, women have been doing that for, you know, all of eternity, but she's a great inspiration. Since then, I've been reading a lot of Sufi writings and gearing up to do this piece again at Decameron, and we're also bringing the whole production fully staged to LA Opera in October of this coming year, 2015. So we're excited for that.
You know what I thought of while you were talking is, do you remember Jeff Buckley?
I'm completely in love with him. His
version
of Alleluia.
Oh, my God. He's amazing.
Forget about it.
He had that same sense of foreboding that he was going to die. And then he also drowned. I find that so... I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what I think about that. But I think that's so... You know, to have both of them... I mean, him in a completely different way.
Far too young as well.
Yeah. But to have lived these very, like, packed lives full of, you know, adventure and, you know, fame and all of that, but to have this like sense constantly that you're, you know,
Totally. And this inspiration of her life, like she lived so freely, like was impelled by this nomadic lifestyle, was a Sufist, but also like drank absinthe and was very sexually free, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a sort of dichotomy, and she was always battling between these two parts of herself.
I think there's something about people who have a some sort of sense of their mortality. Like they feel compelled to live life to the fullest.
Exactly.
You know, and it sounds like she really did. So what's that like, preparing for the role? I mean, you mentioned reading some Sufi texts and things like that.
But yeah, it's interesting. I've had these Sufi texts sitting on my bookshelf for a while, and they just basically fell off my bookshelf. They're like, read me. This one book about Rumi's teachings, you know, like the path of love, Rumi's teachings of Sufism. And Hazrat Inayat Khan's The Music of Life.
Mm-hmm.
He brought Sufi teachings to America. And then, of course, her diaries, which I'm reading again,
yeah,
which are so poetic. And so the first inauguration of this piece was Missy actually did the texts, mm-hmm, from her journals. And then later, Royce Favreck came in and wrote the more extensive operatic version. So it's the greater part of the text is Royce Favreck's, but the beginning part is really from the journals themselves,
yeah,
you know. So
the lyrics are actually pulled from the
journals.
Wow.
It's extremely poetic. And she wrote poems herself and she wrote short stories, but the most poetic stuff is really about her amazing life. Mm. So there's that. Definitely that part of the reading and getting into that character, and getting into the spirit of adventure that is so much a part of that opera. And we'll be doing it's a sort of semi-staged version, it's not completely staged, with the Houston Chamber Choir, and Steve Osgood will be conducting in the Nell Ensemble. And then we have Stephen Taylor did this amazing videos of that will be like accompanying this thing. So it's a multimedia extravaganza, and he pieced together old documentary black and white films together, mm-hmm, that feel like it's part of her life, you know?
I can't wait to see it.
So it's just like getting into that character, what it feels like being somebody that's an adventurer and just, you know, making her own path like constantly. And I guess that's my life is like that pretty much all the time. But it does feel like you're on the precipice of something, uh-huh, new and great. And her music feels like that as well. So let's listen to I Have Arrived. It's actually completely not with singer at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll hear just the sense of movement and, you know, when she finally has arrived in Northern Africa and, mm-hmm, the sense of exploration and discovery.
Okay.
During this whole time, the documentary shows people hustle bustling in the marketplace,
uh-huh,
and, you know, selling different things, and you can feel the excitement, you know?
Yeah, like the momentum of the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're all like you know, covered in their sort of Arab garb. It's a very different kind of, like, mm-hmm. desert world than she was raised in.
You know? So is this when she's kind of entering this world, or has... Okay.
Yeah, this is the part where she actually has arrived from the boat.
Oh, right. Hence the title.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So much of this opera has a lot of momentum in it. Like, there's, I mean, it just seems, there are a lot of, like, ebbs, but it's got this kind of driving characteristic to it.
Yeah.
Through huge chunks.
Oh, yeah. And there's this amazing, what I call the love duet, which is basically her, later on, it's her love duet to the man that she falls in love with, Slimane. This Algerian soldier, and it's basically a love duet between her and the bass. The bass plays the other part. And the documentary, you see a picture of his face. It's "You Are the Dust," and this is an amazing, amazing tribute, because it just shows, the text also shows so wonderfully what was going on in her psyche.
Yeah,
as it's "You are the dust. You are the flood." Mm-hmm. You are the one most loved when left behind. So but that only happens at the end. It's like so heartbreaking.
Oh, because, my God.
You know, she is a born traveler. She has to just, you know, keep going. And so, you know, get back on the horse or get a camel.
I'm back on a camel.
I don't know. I don't even know. Were they on a horse?
I don't know. It said horseback when I looked it up online.
Oh, did you?
Okay. I like to imagine a camel instead.
Camel's, yeah. I only got on a camel once when I was in Mongolia, and it was like the saddest experience, because you could tell those camels were just like there, you know, for like when Westerners came, you know, and getting your $5.
Poor thing.
So you are the sand, you are the dust, you are the breathing earth, you are everything.
Yeah.
You know, everything that is around here. It's this free desert.
Mm-hmm. I hear the
land of possibility.
That duet going on too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about performing the piece, because I know that unlike maybe a more traditional opera, you're on stage by yourself doing this whole thing solo.
Yes, just like, you know, the stylistic freeness in which, like, Missy is paving her own path, you know, stylistically, it's a very unique opera in that it's basically a one-woman opera with a core supporting system of vocal ensemble.
Yeah.
Of five people.
But they're never on stage, right?
They are on stage.
Oh, they are.
But they're
okay.
Not individual characters. They're kind of abstractly her memories.
Like a Greek chorus.
It's just
situation.
Like a Greek
chorus.
Yeah.
Got it.
They're sort of, at one point, one of the guys maybe playing Slimane, her lover.
Mm-hmm.
But not overtly. It's, like I said, it's a very sort of abstract emotional journey that you can kind of tell by absorbing, like, the multiplicity of, like, the multimedia-ness of that whole thing. So, and the sort of poetic nature of the text. But yeah, it is basically a Greek chorus that, you know, could be her memories or different parts of her.
Mm.
Let's listen to "I Am Not Mine."
Okay.
Which is basically the other love ballad, and I kind of love it. For the electronics at the beginning. and just sort of the feeling, that potent feeling of her adventurousness. So I definitely spent some time in her studio recording some some vocal tracks. But not all of it is me. Some of it is the other, Kate Maroney, the alto and the the ensemble.
Is this sort of, are these electronic elements brought into the performance?
It's pre-recorded.
Okay.
So, but it is sort of, it's mixed, you know, mixed with the ensemble live in the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
This will definitely be part of the show.
Cool.
So the electronics are kind of like pulsing, almost like a heartbeat.
Yeah.
like her own internal heartbeat, her feeling.
It really works. I mean, the sort of overall feeling that you know, it creates the atmosphere, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm interested too, speaking of performing this a lot, like I've been listening to the recording on Bandcamp. The actual recording is really interesting, and I don't know how aside from your performance, I don't know how involved you were with that process, but the production of it is really neat. It involves a lot of like little background noises and electronic sounds, and it's got this very contemporary feel, you know, of this you know, fairly old story. I think that was such an interesting juxtaposition.
If you have heard Missy's more electronically inspired band, Victoire, that is very much a reflection of her band experience. And then this is a reflection of bringing that influence into the classical realm. She's using all these electronic sounds, which are pre-recorded me, pre-recorded other members of the Greek chorus. I think it's the spirit of Isabel and applied in the 21st century, you know?
Yeah.
Also, thinking about, like, how the Now Ensemble, their aesthetic is, within that group, is, you know, the electric guitar. So,
right.
Innately, that changes the sound. It sounds much more modern.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this kind of genre sounds so good, the sort of post-minimalist influenced kind of repetitive quality of the work, sort of the momentum moving forward with the electronic sound of the guitar and then also the electronics being like overtly worked together in the recording.
Yeah, and this is quite a long opera.
Yeah, so it's a big thing for one person.
What is that like?
It definitely is like running a marathon a little bit.
I bet.
Yeah. And vocally speaking, it's for a mezzo, which is really defined by range, there are three sort of basic, what you might think of basic female voice types. So you have like a soprano, a mezzo soprano, so which means it's like middle in, you know, in Italian, middle soprano, and then like alto or contralto. So the contralto would be happy, like, sitting low most of the time, and then occasionally go up. And then mezzo is sort of defined by range, you know, happy to go up there and down there, but generally, you know, sits in the middle.
Yeah.
So it's an unusual thing for me because I don't actually get to go up there until really close to the end. And
that's
when she sort of accepts her fate fully. And she's like, wash me away, wash me away. And that's, there's only one A, which is actually, is a very unusual for a mezzo part. But it does really reflect what's going on in the film and what's going on in her life. It's sort of, there's this flood like slowly building up. And it's just after she's discovered these letters that Slimane says he's left her for another woman.
No.
And so she's reading this letter and it's, you know, she releases the pages and it falls onto the floor, sort of like her diaries were when she, you know, when they picked up the pieces after the flash flood, and she just basically succumbs to her fate. She's like, I give up, you know.
Well, we have to hear that.
Yeah.
We have to.
Well, that would be the Mech Tube 2. That's when it just all falls apart.
Yeah.
Oh, capsized heart. Yeah. Everything is falling apart. This is familiar. Is my companion.
Man.
So there's this sort of how quickly love evaporates.
Uh-huh.
This chorus that keeps on coming back.
Oh. Wow.
Leaving me a desert.
And are those her words, or is it, like, do you know if those came from her journals? I mean, that's some good writing.
That is, it's very close to what she had written.
Yeah.
I actually brought the diary here.
Oh, you did?
Cool. Yeah, so death is familiar, death is my companion. Wash me away. There's the one A, which is very versus very unusual, but it's this sense of foreboding for the entire piece until that moment.
I didn't even think about that while I was listening to it. How kind of low everything sits, like in your vocal range.
That's
it's very storytelling.
Yeah. I think she wanted to write for that part of my voice, which.
Mm-hmm.
I think she liked the sort of the lower kind of lustrous quality.
Yeah.
And that sort of deep and dark timbres that she could hear in that range, which is definitely like totally imbued all through these journals, you know. It's and so it doesn't really go up into that high range until she's just like ready to you know, release herself to her fate. I'll just read the very beginning. Of literally the very beginning of the journal.
Okay.
It says, it's the first day, January 1st, 1900. I am alone, sitting facing the gray expanse of the shifting sea. I am alone, alone as I've always been, everywhere, as I'll always be throughout this seductive and deceptive universe. Alone with a whole world of dashed hopes, disappointment, and disillusion, behind me and of memories that grow daily more distant, almost losing all reality.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing.
That is amazing. She's very, like, clear. It's you know, difficult as a writer to encapsulate that kind of emotion. She does it so succinctly.
It has this so potent quality.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. How does that affect you as a performer? I imagine, like, I've never acted, I've never done anything like that, but I mean, like, you're essentially putting on the suit of this person. You're becoming this person for a while. How does it feel after you've performed this? You've been rehearsing this. You take this person with you.
I definitely think you feel the spirit of that person with you during the performance, during the preparation of that. I would not be surprised, like, spiritually, if it wasn't actually like she was there somehow.
Yeah.
You know, because I think you just kind of sit in her skin, and I don't think you can play a character without having some similarity. You have to hook into that similarity, and there definitely is that, you know, in me and in Missy.
You empathize, like, with,
oh yeah,
with her.
Yeah. Big time. Plotting your own way. I think it's about the essence of what she's saying. It's very profound. It's potent, like we said.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, and it's about something that you can't even explain in words. Like I said, I got those two Sufis texts, like, literally jumped off the bookshelf a couple months ago, mm-hmm. right before I'm about to do this. And then I went to a couple Sufi classes.
Oh, interesting.
And it really is about sitting inside something.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the best way that I can describe sitting inside her, you know,
yeah.
sitting inside that character is kind of like a meditation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you do feel her, but it's like, how do you feel? You know, it's hard. You can't really put it in words exactly how that happens, but it happens.
Yeah. Abigail Fisher, thank you so much for being on The Classical Classroom. This was really interesting, and I can't wait to see the show.
Yeah, I hope you can make it.
Which, again, if you're here in Houston, is going to be on Friday, March the 20th. I think you can go to the Decameron of Houston website to check that out. We'll put a link up in the web article for this episode as well on our website at houstonpublicmedia.org. All right, that about does it for this episode. For more Classical Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom or follow us on SoundCloud. You can listen to us on Stitcher or tune in or subscribe on iTunes, whatever floats your boat. You can email me at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Touche Holslander for making us sound nice. Thanks to program director Sinjin Flynn for trying to figure out his computer despite the odds. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing Jawa-like eyes. Thanks to Abigail Fisher for being here today. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.